Vidyadhaka, and yeah, I've been asked to give a talk on money, which is not my favourite subject, or it's not even my subject. I don't even know if it's favourite or not. I've never had a huge amount of money. I don't really know much about it, apart from it passes through my hands fairly rapidly. And at the moment, I'm not on a path to accumulate much of it. So in a way, I'm not the best person to speak on money. I've never, my background is more, like I used to be a graphic designer, for example. So, you know, I sort of studied visual communication and stuff. And at school, I was much more into the arts than I was into math. So I might not say very much about money at all, but anyway. So what we'll do is I'll talk for maybe, I'll try and make it about half an hour. Might be a bit longer, but anyway, I'll try and make it half an hour or so, and then hopefully there will be some time for questions if you have questions. But you can't ask me anything about inflation rates or hedge funds. And if there's another event that you want to go to while I'm talking, do feel free to leave. You don't need to stay. On the other hand, if most of you leave, I'll start getting a bit nervous. I'll have to look at my notes because I can't remember the plan that I've made. It could be a bit complicated. I'm going to try and make it as simple as possible. But I'm just going to talk about, base my talk on a sutta that was given by the Buddha. And a sutta is a discourse, like a teaching. So it would be the equivalent of a Buddhist teacher giving a teaching, and it gets written down, or in the Buddhist time it was an oral tradition, and that teaching got passed on, and all of those teachings of the Buddha just accumulated into what are called threads of teaching. So sutta is a teaching given by the Buddha, and the Buddha was trying to communicate what an enlightened mind is to unenlightened minds, i.e. people like us. So the Buddha became enlightened. If you want to know something a bit more about enlightenment, then Maitra Bandhu is giving a talk at 3 p.m. called Enlightenment. So you could come back for that, and he'll try and talk more explicitly about that. But for now, the Buddha had an experience that is pretty much unknown to us, but is accessible to us through a set of practices and teachings and discipline. And the Buddha tried to communicate that. The Buddha was primarily, well, one of the things that the Buddha was interested in is existence or experience. So why and how does experience happen? We're all having experience now. It's happening. The Buddha tried to uncover, and did uncover, the conditions that bring experience into being. Okay? So it's just he just had an analytical mind, and he looked at experience and looked at why and how is experience happening. So I don't know if that has ever occurred to you, but it occurred to the Buddha. And he broke it down into various kind of stages so that he could start to understand experience more fully. So the primary kind of fact, if you like, or the primary condition for experience is consciousness. No consciousness, no experience. Yeah, we all know that. Every day we lose consciousness. We do have some sort of dream experience, but that is part of consciousness. But when you don't have consciousness, you don't have experience. On the basis of consciousness, he says, arises our material physical form with the eyes and the ears and the noses and all of that. So according to the Buddha, consciousness comes before form. But then because we've got a body, we come into contact with the world through our eyes and our senses and so forth. And in that contact, there is feeling, isn't there? There's an experience that's pleasant or unpleasant. That just happens. Nothing we can do about it. On the basis of that, on the condition of that, if that's there, the Buddha then talked about craving arising. So if we have a pleasant experience or we want a pleasant experience, we go after it. And the Buddha said, well, that's craving. And that often arises on the basis of feeling. Okay? So I hope that's clear so far. Okay? The Buddha then goes on to say, well, if you've got craving as a condition, so this deep-rooted kind of reaching out for pleasure and avoidance of pain, if you've got that as a condition, then you're likely to continue existence. Yeah. Anyway, at this point, we're going to divert, and I'll try and get onto money. So in this sutta, it's called the Great Discourse of Causation. Yeah, so he's looking at the causes of experience. And interestingly, he also, he first of all lists that, you could say, if you look at it in terms of individuals, yeah, individual experience. But he also, in this sutta, sort of, in a way, fleshes it out a bit and looks at it in terms of society. So I'm going to go through the list, the set of conditions, and we can relate this to money. Okay, so we start off with craving. Okay, so the Buddha is talking about craving as a deep motivational or emotive force in our lives that is constantly wanting something more. Yeah, you must know that it's part of what we do. It's that kind of yearning for more, and that usually manifests without awareness in trying to get pleasure and trying to avoid pain. Okay, this is fairly basic Buddhist teaching. It's like the basic foundation. So the first condition is craving. Yeah, on the basis of what I've said before. So the Buddha then says, well, one of the things that can happen on the basis of craving, if craving is present, and it is present, let's face it, 99% of the time, if not more, one of the things that happens is what he calls pursuit. Yeah, so pursuit comes into existence. So I take this to mean basically you start chasing it. Yeah, whatever it is that you're craving, you start pursuing it, don't you? Whether it's a house or a partner or a new pair of trousers, you want it, this craving gets caught up in trying to get it. Yeah, and of course, money is very, very sticky, isn't it? That sort of thing. It's very tempting to get caught up in craving money. And of course, a lot of us spend a lot of our time devote in the pursuit of money, don't we? We devote our time to try and get it, to try and get enough, not only to cover food and rent and so forth, but we try and get more. We want more money. So pursuit arises on the basis of craving. No craving, no pursuit. Yeah, it's one of the things that arises on the basis of craving. On the basis of pursuit, of course, we gain, don't we? So the next condition that arises is we gain something. If we pursue it long enough, we get money. We gain it, we have it. Yeah, it's pretty obvious. If we pursue a new pair of trousers or a new yoga mat, eventually we'll get it. The primary thing is the pursuit. If you haven't got, if you're not interested in a new yoga mat or a new car, you're unlikely to get it. Yeah, so you're unlikely to gain it. On the basis of gaining or nearly gaining something arises decision making. Yeah, so you know what it's like. You get to the shop, you've been thinking about your new laptop for however long, you've saved up enough money to get it. You go into the shop to get it, you've got to decide, haven't you? You've got to decide, well, do I want this or not, A? B, which one shall I have? There's about 50 laptops in front of me. Which one am I going to have? Once you have gained it, you've got to then decide, what do I do with it? How much, do you see what I mean? So it starts to engage, the decision-making faculty, which arises on the basis of gain. No gain, nothing to decide. Of course, that act of decision-making stimulates the next condition, which is desire and lust. Okay? So you know what it's like. I was doing it fairly recently in a shop. All these things, I definitely want, say, whatever it was, a new pair of trousers. There's about, 30 different types of trousers. I go through the whole process. Well, do I want straight cut? Do I want narrow cut? Do I want boot cut? Whatever it is. All of that. As I'm doing that, that's starting to stimulate in me more of a desire to get what I want. Do you see what I mean? The whole decision-making process stimulating more of a desire to get what I want. It's the same with money. Once you've got money, you've got to decide what to do with it, haven't you? You have to decide. Once you've gained it, you have to decide. Usually that stimulates desire, doesn't it? It usually stimulates, okay, I've got this money. Actually, I do want that new thing. I can get it now. I've got I am going to get it. So do you see what it's stimulating, a sort of desire for new things that arises on the basis of decision making. And you start to, of course, like the thing, don't you? You start to like it, you start to even love it, you start to treasure it. We'll come on to that. The next thing that arises on the basis of this sort of desire and lust for objects or money is attachment. We become attached to it as an object. We think about it in terms of an object that we can have. Yeah, we just start to identify with it, if you see what I mean. We start to make it mine. We say, okay, I've got this thing. I've decided I want it. I've chosen this thing out of all the different things to have. I now really like it because I've put effort into getting it. It's now mine. This money is mine. This new yoga mat is mine. This car is mine. Okay? That identification and attachment has arisen on the basis of what's gone before. Okay? No desire and lust, no attachment. This attachment is probably best visualized in, have you seen The Lord of the Rings with Gollum, you know, and the ring? And he just, you know what he goes like? He gets really obsessed with the ring. It's mine. It's really quite spooky, isn't it? When you see Gollum, you think, crikey, that's a bit too close to the bone. But we identify with it, and we sort of turn things into our identity. So if we've got a lot of money, we start to identify as someone who has a lot of money. If we've got, you know, an expensive shirt, we want people to see that. We identify with it. It starts to become part of our character. Do you see what I mean? We modify ourselves with this new object that we've got. If we have a new house, we identify ourselves as the sort of person who lives in that sort of house, in that sort of area of London, and does those sorts of things. So, but yeah, Gollum, I think, is a good example of that, that kind of attaching, that very strong identity with "it's mine." On the basis of that, yeah, on the basis of that arises possessiveness. Of course, once you've got it, you want to possess it, you want to keep it. Okay, if you've got money, you want to keep it. You put it in a bank. You keep hold of it. You start to even protect it, don't you? And this is where ownership and property comes in. It, on the basis of something that you believe to be yours, you then own it. And there are laws about that, of course. But there are laws about that. That arises on the basis of possessiveness, according to the Buddha. On the basis of possessiveness arises what he calls stinginess. Okay, it's an attitude of ungenerousness. Okay, if you've got, you might have thousands of pounds in the bank that you're possessing, which you identify with, which you say is mine, and you can then, of course, then say, if someone asks you for it, you can, of course, then say, and it's very tempting to say, no. You're not having it. It's not yours. It's mine. I don't want to give it to you. Okay? You could say that the whole exchange culture of modern society is based on that. It's based on possession and stinginess. I think it's the exchange culture where you say, okay, well, that object is worth that amount and it's only available to you if you've got that amount to swap it for, is a veil for stinginess and an ungenerous nature. It's so much part of how we operate, it's almost impossible to see. But, we call it the marketplace. But I think it's a veil for ungenerousness and selfishness. On the basis of stinginess, which arises on the basis of possessiveness and owning things, which arises on the basis of attachment and making things mine, on the basis of stinginess arises what the Buddha calls safeguarding. Okay, it's perfectly normal, isn't it? You then set up, you then make yourself secure. Security is a massive business. You need to secure what you've said is yours, otherwise someone will take it and it won't be yours anymore, and that's extremely painful. Security, big thing in our culture, isn't it? Huge thing. That impulse to secure arises on the impulse of stinginess. Yeah, once you've made something yours, you want to protect it. In a way, it's perfectly natural. But it's natural only in the sense of that's the culture we've generated amongst ourselves. And then finally, on the basis of safeguarding, which we could call security in modern language, is the Buddha calls, finally, various evil phenomena, which isn't very great, is it? Various evil phenomena, which you could call animosity, desire, craving, competition. Yeah. All the things that often are glossed over in modern media as being, well, often quite good. Competition is glossed over as being good. It's good to live in a competitive society, you know. Okay, so that's the sequence. All of that, according to the Buddha, arises in dependence upon craving. Okay, all of that sequence. It's not the only thing that can arise on the dependence of craving, but that's one sequence. I think that's a really clear teaching on what we do. And you can relate it directly to money. You crave money, you pursue it. With the pursuit, you try and gain it. With the gain of it, or nearly the gain of it. You have to decide what you're going to do with it. As you decide what to do with it, it stimulates desire and lust for more of it or the things that you want to do with it. On the basis of that desire, that lust, arises attachment. You start to identify with it. Because you identify with it, you possess it, you make it mine, you own it. On the basis of owning things, you become stingy, you protect it, you want to safeguard it, and that gets you into negative mental states. It doesn't make you happy. But probably, the reason that we grasp it in the first place and want it in the first place is to try and shore up our happiness, isn't it? That's probably what we're trying to do. When you're trying to get money to probably get pleasure so that you can get happiness. And it's very, very deeply, what you could even call intuitive. It's so much part of how we operate. But according to this, and according to the Buddha, it leads to various evil phenomena. Okay, that isn't happiness. Okay, it will give you a bit of happiness, of course, but it just won't last. And then you're caught up in all the other things, protecting it, safeguarding it, etc. Okay. So that's the list. I want to speak a little bit more. So is that clear? It's quite easy to follow, actually, isn't it? It's quite sort of obvious. You can even very easily see it playing out in your life. So the Buddha was talking about this, 2,500 years ago, but to me it seems more relevant now than, well, I don't know about ever. I've only been around for 4 decades or so. But it seems pretty relevant to me anyway. So you could say that if you do that with your life, it won't work, because if you're trying to use money on the basis of craving to satisfy that craving, it won't work, because of course money can never satisfy craving. You'll always want something more. It's obvious, isn't it? It's obvious that money won't make you happy, but it's not very obvious as well in another sort of way. Of course, the society we live in is financial society. We do need money, and probably if you haven't got enough, you won't be happy either. You can see that. All you need to do is walk up a street and see people who haven't got enough money, and capitalism doesn't work. You can't go into a shop to get a coffee. It's sort of tragic, really, that we've got this system that only works if you have money. If you haven't got money, it doesn't work. Like this amazing world we've created where most of us can get anything we want. If you haven't got money, you can't do it. You're not involved. It doesn't work. So our society is very, very heavily dependent on money as a means of functioning. So you have to have some of it, of course, to get reasonably happy. But you don't need that much. And then what do you do? The temptation is to get more. That's what the temptation is to work in a way that gets you more money, because you're not satisfied at the level you're at. There are, of course, other people who have got more money or more possessions or whatever, and the temptation is strong to get more. In fact, society is even designed like that, isn't it? The biggest value society promotes is more happiness. Actually, you could say that whole first chunk of that list, from pursuit to attachment, is basically what advertising does. That's what advertising does. It gets you to pursue objects on the basis of, if you have them, you'll be happy. And for that, you need money. And, you have to work hard to get money to get those objects. So you could say that those first few steps of that what advertising does, stimulates that pursuit. So you can do that without awareness. That's what most of us will do. Without awareness, most people will spend their time and energy getting that and being involved with that. So you could say that, well, that's the development of wealth. And it's what most of us do. It's what most countries try and do. It's what most nation states do. They develop wealth and material wealth. But you can't only do that if you want to be happy, of course. Even content would be a better word than happiness. You have to develop your mind. If you develop your mind, you're not so much under the sway of craving. Okay? So craving is the key point in this chain. If you can do something about craving, it means that you can do something else on the basis of it that doesn't lead to pursuit, gain, what we've listed. So that's the key bit. And this is, in a way, what the Buddha is helping us try and do. You start to bring awareness to that basic desire for more in your life. We all have it. You've experienced it probably many, many times. I can remember when I was like in my teenage years and my parents lived in the countryside, and at night you could see the stars. You can just about see some stars in London, but in the countryside you can see the stars much more clearly. And, you know, as a young teenager, I was pretty impressed. You know, I sort of remember looking at the stars and just feeling that sense of like wonder at like just the enormity of the universe. Just basically, it was just the enormity of my imagination, if you see what I mean. But the universe was helping that come into being. And, you know, we've probably all had experiences like that at times of loss, the experience of beauty. You see that there's something more to life. There is something more to life. It actually exists. It's not just like a fairy story or a fable. There is something more, and it is worth pursuing. And if you can get your craving, so to speak, onto that, that leads you into a different chain of events. Okay? So we need to find a way of re-channeling that thirst. You could think of let's come back to that. But to do that, you need to develop your mind, and to do that, you probably need to stop to some extent developing your wealth. You need to develop your mind. You could think of money as energy. You could think of money as energy. You don't have to relate to money as something you only accumulate. I can remember like someone gave me some money, not very much, a couple of £100 or something, and I can remember as soon as I got it, I started fantasizing about how I was going to spend it. I can get that. And I then suddenly started thinking, oh no, I could give it away. Like the thought occurred to me, oh, I could give it away. And I realised that the actual thought of generosity was more pleasant and enjoyable than the thought of what shall I get. Did you see what I mean? The actual experience of thinking I could give it away actually made me happier than thinking, what shall I get? I can't remember what I did, but there's a lot of resistance, isn't there, to get to generosity. You have to overcome your resistance. I was walking, a few months ago, I was walking around and got stopped on the street, and a young woman was wanting to ask me if I would be willing to stop and talk to her about homeless people. I kind of, you know, I could see her, I knew, can I avoid her? Shall I cross over the road? No, she's directly in my path. Okay, just try and be friendly, Vidyadhara, don't react. You know what it's like. There's a lot of resistance. Someone stops you in the street. She stopped me in the street. I was like, no. Internally, I was like, no, I just want to carry on doing what I was doing, which is probably just kind of looking in shops. And so internally, I was like, no. And I was like, Vidyadhara, just listen to what she's got to say. Just listen. You can say no. Just at least give her your attention. At least give her your attention. So I just listened. I got over that hump of resistance. I listened. She talked. She just talked about basic things like some people haven't got very much money and they haven't got any houses to live in. They live on the streets. It's obvious. We know that. But I was really moved by what she said. It was quite matter of fact. I was moved, and I signed up for a standing order, and that felt really good. And it was hardly anything. I didn't give very much, but it was something. And I'm not saying that you've now got to go out and give standing orders. I'm not saying that really, but I'm just using that to illustrate the deep pull within us to keep what we've got on the basis of the assumption that we think if we let it go, we'll be unhappy. Do you see what I mean? Actually, if you let it go, more likely than not, you'll be happy, because the basis of holding it on, that stinginess, according to the Buddha, and as far as I can see in my experience, leads to various evil phenomena, which is unhappiness. So, you can develop your mind. You can turn your attention more towards what is actually what we could say is the more in life. Yeah, you can turn your attention to that. And Buddhism places a lot of importance on this. That Buddhism places a lot of importance on the basis of this craving, this desire, this thirst, how you act on the basis of that is key, because it's an ethical decision, it's an ethical life. If you act with greed, it will have certain effects in your life. If you act with generosity, it will have certain other effects in your life. It's entirely your choice, but they're qualities of mind that you can develop. I think if you develop your ethical life, if you develop the qualities in your mind rather than your wealth, you'll naturally start to have a much more relaxed attitude around your possessions and around money. They'll stop being such a burden and a limiting factor in your life, and they can become sources of happiness. But it's the clinging to them, the identification to them, that causes us the very thing that we're trying to get away from in the first place. Okay, so maybe I'll leave it there. That was a brief overview on what the Buddha talked about, and one of the things that arises on the basis of craving. And I think in our society today, money is the prime mover when it comes to craving. It's the thing that we do. We do a lot of trying to satisfy our craving through money, and a lot of that is to do with identity and who we think we are, and the values that we have grown up with within society that we've imbued and we think are right and normal and correct. But they're just a sequence of conditions that arise on the basis of craving. And the Buddha's saying something completely different He's not saying you then can't live in society, but you can live very, very differently in society if you have developed qualities in your mind rather than developed your possessions or your wealth. When you die, you can't take anything with you. I mean, I know that's obvious. Everyone knows that. But when you see, like, you know, we had a funeral in the week, Jai Mitra, an Order member, and I went to see him 4 weeks ago in the hospice, and he was quite clearly close to death. And, you know, he didn't have anything. You know, you get, one day something happens, you get sent to hospital, you haven't got time to deal with your flat and tie up your possessions, and you can't do it. You have to go to hospital. You can't go to the bank on the way to hospital. You have to go to hospital. Often you might not even have a chance to get any of the possessions that you've been working all your life for. You just have to go to hospital. You never know what's going to happen. And he never went back. He went into a hospice. All those things that he spent his time getting, you can't take with you. You just can't do it. You can't take a single penny. Like, you can't even take 1p with you into death. You can't do it. It's impossible. But you can take positive states of mind. According to the Buddha, you can take those with you, so to speak. They outlast your physical body. Money and wealth can't outlast your physical body. Positive states of mind do, according to the Buddhist tradition. The only way to develop positive states of mind is to do it while you can. You can't do it at that end bit. It's too late then. So I suppose the encouragement of the Buddha is to develop your mind and not your money. So I'll leave it there. So we've got, if we want to use it, we've got maybe 10 minutes. So if you're feeling inclined, you're very welcome to ask a question, if you have any, yeah.
Maybe a bit long with you. So you're talking about desire and craving. Mm-hmm. I feel like what you're talking about with money and desire for it is kind of a twisting of maybe how animals work, how nature worked. Like, for instance, if we didn't have craving or desire for food, everybody would drop dead.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's a good thing on the one hand.
Yeah, that's right.
Didn't have it. And then when you think about food, you think about, well, the accumulation of food, like you see all the squirrels, you know, going out and collecting their nuts for the winter.
Yeah.
Or in the older days, maybe us as humans collecting berries and then keeping it there just because it's a bad
thing.
It's like a hedge, right?
Yeah.
Against things going wrong.
Yeah.
So that, like protecting those things, is also another thing. You don't want, like if you went to a squirrel's tree and tried to take all its nuts,
you'd
get angry and say, no, this is my nuts. I don't want to die. Right?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
It's kind of this level of hedging or protecting against things going bad is why you're collecting this food.
Yeah.
And then money leads to that as well.
Yeah.
Where we are right now, we can't go out and shoot a rabbit or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
To do it. So we have to collect money to protect
of course.
Ourselves against things going wrong.
Yeah.
Protect our families or whatever. So I know this is a bit long-winded, but that's kind of why you have to accumulate things.
Yeah.
If you don't accumulate anything, something goes wrong, you're in big trouble, right? Or this is how you can fit. My question is, I get that going too far is too, you know, when you start accumulating planes and whatever, that's not you know, a hedge against things going wrong.
Yeah.
But how do you just draw the line? Like, you know, some desire and craving is good and some accumulation is good because otherwise you get in trouble.
Yeah.
But then too much is...
Well,
how do you kind of balance that?
Well, the way to balance it in terms of the Buddha... What the Buddha says is not. He doesn't talk about good and bad. He talks about skillful and unskillful. So, Buddhism is about living in a skillful way. So, skillful means positive mental states. Okay. Unskillfulness is negative mental states. The classic negative mental states are greed, hatred, delusion, conceit, pride, arrogance. Yeah, we're familiar with those. If you act on the basis of those emotions or states of mind, yeah, forget about anything to do with what you've got or trying to get anything. If you act on the basis of that, greed or hatred or delusion, you will suffer. Yeah, that's the, according to Buddha, that's the law of karma. It's a natural law, okay? If you act on the basis of generosity, of love, of wisdom, okay, you won't suffer. The Buddha says this is a law, it's a natural law, okay? This doesn't adhere to squirrels. It only comes into being when there's sentient consciousness, reflexive awareness. You and I, we all have reflexive awareness. We can make decisions on the basis of a huge complex of conditions. Because we have that reflexive awareness, it has an ethical implication. It has an ethical kind of law, a bit like gravity is attached to mass. Attached to reflexive awareness is ethics, is karma. Okay? If you make decisions in your life on the basis of greed, hatred or delusion, you will suffer. If you make decisions and act in your life on the basis of open-handed generosity, love and wisdom, you won't suffer. Okay. So you can see how much you can accumulate. Okay, if you can accumulate stuff skillfully, then no problem. No problem. You've got to work out for yourself what is it that's powering you. You know, I mean, if you can honestly accumulate huge amounts of money without greed, fine, no problem. The Buddha's not saying there's anything wrong with that at all. All the Buddha's saying is if you act with greed, hatred, or delusion, you'll suffer. That's only a problem if you don't want to suffer. If you want to suffer, fine. It's not a problem. Most people, from if you look at them, don't want to suffer. Okay, they don't want that feeling of dissatisfaction in their life. And when I talk about suffering, it's not like big pain or trauma. It's the daily feeling that life isn't quite working. Okay, if you stop acting on the basis of unskillful states, you can see through that whole thing. It doesn't arise. Okay? So it's only a problem if you don't want to suffer. If you're happy with greed, you're happy with accumulating stuff, and you don't mind being greedy, and you're also able to take on the chin all the stuff that comes with that, and you don't mind being unhappy, and you don't mind animosity and being unskillful, fine. It's absolutely fine. The Buddha's not saying you need to stop doing that. If you're acting unskillfully and you've got this feeling that life isn't working and you've got all this money or you've got all this food and still doesn't work, frustrating. You want to be happier than you are, you should be, you've got all this stuff, then it's a problem. And the Buddhas say, well, if you feel that, then you can do something about it. You can act in a different way. That doesn't mean to say you stop accumulating stuff. It doesn't mean to say you have to close down your bank account and sell your house and wander around. That would be ludicrous. It's just saying you can start acting skillfully. Okay? When you bring ethics into the picture, then that will start to influence your whole opinion of yourself and others, and you start to modify your behaviour. And if you start to practice the Dharma, the teaching of the Buddha, it will start to have an effect in your mind. So you'll find yourself in the John Lewis department of the technology section, looking at all the speakers you can plug into your iPhone and you will think more clearly about what you're doing and what the ethical implications are. It's not to say that you can't have that new speaker or whatever it is, but you know what you're doing and the consequences that you're putting into place for your future life. Okay? So it's not that we need to start going back to a basic, primitive, squirrel-like existence. It's more the fact that because we have reflexive awareness, we are under the law of karma. And there's nothing you can do about that. You can't get out of it. You need to know about it. Once you know about it, you can then affect your future life. Okay? But there's no point spending your life accumulating stuff and then getting in a mood when someone nicks it or life doesn't go your way. If you're happy with that, then that's fine. No problem. Okay, so thank you very much for the question. So, let's leave it there. There's another talk starting in a minute, which is on sex, so I'm quite glad I don't have to talk about that. So you're welcome to stay in here, or if not, go next door. So thank you very much.